What's up, Hammer?
I have no idea what you guys are arguing about.
Oh, man. There's
oh, wow. There's
lots of lake show talk.
Come on.
Oh, this is terrific. Poor Zabo down in the valley. Well, we were talking about Carmelo Anthony. Carmelo Anthony was the birth of the OK Lake Show clip and so on. And here we are. And now we are 57 minutes before the Sacramento Kings take on the Washington Wizards. We said this today. Hammer the Kings. They don't have any more letdowns in them. Like the next letdown may mark the end of their season. They got to get the job done tonight against a bad basketball team in the nation's capital.
Yeah, I mean, this is it. Like you can't lose any of these. Well, these two games right here. You know, I think most of the games from here on out are coin flip or a little bit worse. You know, the Cavs are a tough game. Denver's a tough game, but. The Wizards and the Hornets just aren't. And these are teams that are looking to lose. There are teams that are lottery bound and more interested in Cooper Flagg than they are the Sacramento Kings. And I would be shocked if this wasn't a 20-point win and probably closer to a 30-point win. Just because, to be honest with you, the Kings have actually played really well against bad teams recently. It's when the level of competition raises that you start to have issues.
Yeah, James, settle down. Settle down. We're not there yet. We're not there yet to say 20, 30 points. We're not there. Just win. Hey, JWTDG. Okay. Just win the damn game.
All right.
That's what we're looking for. But your point is well taken. I mean, against teams who have been down and out for the most part, they've been able to handle business. But do you look at the Kings? We were having this discussion earlier as well. Do you look at the Kings as just a bad team? Like, do you think this is who they are? They're a bad team, and there's nothing to be expected, you know, moving forward this season with these guys?
No, I mean, I look at the Kings, and this is something that my partner over the Kings beat always says, Sean Cunningham. He says they're just a 500 team. That's not a bad team. It's not a good team. It's just a 500 team. And, you know, it's they definitely are a disappointment. So I'm not going to, like, steal that away from them. They're definitely a disappointment. But whether they're just, like, a flat-out bad team, I don't think so. You know, again, I fully expect them to fight this out and to have a good shot at being in the play-in. And I actually think that they can beat Dallas. And if somehow Memphis falls to them, I certainly think they can beat Memphis. You know, there are other teams in this sort of like area of play that I think they can beat and they can get into the playoffs. I'm not convinced that's going to happen, but I think there is a chance of that. And the problem that I have is that this just isn't it going forward. Like, there has to be drastic changes going forward. And whatever happened here to make the drastic moves that they did during the season, to me, like I would have never, they didn't make sense to me at the time and they don't make sense to me now. And that's not something I would have done if I were running this team. I would have tried to wait until this summer. I would have made sure that I know exactly who was running this team before I made the dramatic changes that I did do. And then I would have moved forward accordingly. I'm not saying you shouldn't have made trades at the deadline. Clearly, this team needed some roster shakeups, but there's a difference between shaking the roster and, you know, lopping off the whole top of the tree, you know, which is what you kind of did.
Real quick, I just got to, you know, JWTDG, Zabo was first with that today, so I got to post it.
Oh, don't pander to Zabo.
Why?
No, don't pander to Zabo.
He was first. He said
you
it.
You owe Zabo an apology.
That's my boy. He said it, so I got it on the screen.
Entire world upside down.
And people are asking if I've ever said the Lake Show comment. Yeah, you can find, there's a drop where
well, that's
mockingly
true.
Yep. Say it just well, like
you
Kenny
said
does.
It. Yes, you say it you say it as Kenny.
The question was, though, yeah. Who said it unironically?
Yeah.
James clearly falls with us.
Only Kenny.
Yeah.
No.
Only Kenny did.
I'm talking about
no Carmelo, irony in there.
Man. Jim, there's finger pointing all over the place. You talk about this isn't it. This isn't it moving forward. I think I know the answer to this. Where do you start the blame? When you dissect this season and you dissect what's happened the last, I guess, two seasons, where do you start the blame with?
I start the blame with the front office, with Monty and Wes, you know, and just because Wes exits like stage left, I'm not going to take his name off what happened here.
Mm-hmm.
Like, look, this was avoidable. That's the long and the short of it. It was avoidable. You know, if you had personality conflicts, you had players coming in and saying, hey, I want to play for Mike Brown, and other players coming in saying, I don't want to play for Mike Brown. Then you have a sit down and you work through those differences. You know, if you know that you have issues at the wing, you know that every team in the league that's worth their salt has long and athletic threes and fours, and you have one of them and that's it, then you attack that position with a different type of intensity than what we've seen here the last couple of years. You don't squander a first round pick on a player that was going to miss 6 months. You don't, because that right there, that's one of them. You could have gone out and got, whether it's, you know, I don't know, De Silva, or, you know, why am I drawing a blank? The kid Dalton, Connect.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, there were options here. Ryan Dunn, there were options that you could have tried to fill that void. You could have traded that pick to try to go get one of those players that you needed. Like, I look at what like De'Aaron Fox was asking for, and I've never had a problem with what De'Aaron Fox asked for, because it was the same thing we've asked for on the radio for the last 2 years. Just go get the right players. And we're not saying go get a superstar. We're not saying go get another 20-point scorer. We're saying go get the right type of player to fit the system that you have in place. And so, like, that's where I would start the blame. Unfortunately, it's with the front office, and I don't think there's anyone who's clear of blame there. But I also, like, I just think that so many things were avoidable. And then when we get to the big transaction, like, I blame everybody. Mm-hmm. I blame everybody from top to bottom. I blame ownership. I blame the players. I blame those around the player. I blame, you know, again, the front office, ownership, you know, everybody. Mm. Like, there should have been a way to fix this thing before blowing it up and sending your, not just your season, but potentially the next 3 to 5 seasons off kilter and towards a dark place. And it's just, you know, one of the worst things is you had to choose a path. When if you decided to trade De'Aaron Fox, you had to choose a path. And even that path, I don't think was the right path that they chose. Like, if you were going to blow it up, then blow it up. If you were going to go get assets, go get assets. But that's not what you did. You made yourself into, you know, pretty much like status quo for the next season or two. And that's just a really tough place, unless it all worked out perfectly. And sure, we have hindsight of 2020, but you can rewind the tape just like you rewinded Kenny saying Lake Show,
mm-hmm.
and see how, yeah, I was saying the same exact thing when you made the trade, the same exact thing before you made the trade. I said the same exact thing like in October when we were making predictions on what could happen here. And unfortunately, a lot of that is proven out.
Well, you know, one of the things that you had to deal with, and I think James is all right with that. Well, I shouldn't speak for him. He can answer. But I think if you kept De'Aaron Fox, you'd be throwing this season away. And this season hasn't worked out anyway. But it felt like especially after that fateful OKC game, well, Philly and then OKC, that it was going to be a problem moving forward to have him around. And if you want to keep him around past the deadline, that's cool, because you know, you want to get the best deal you can get, but it felt like you'd be punting on this season. This season had no shot. And I think part of the thinking was, I still want to give this season a shot at making the playoffs. May not work out anyway, but it really that, and maybe just prisoner of the moment, but that week it felt like this team was, they can't move forward as is and still be successful. That's what it felt
like. I get you, but I'll tell you that when they fired Michael Malone in, what, the 2015 season, right? Mm-hmm. They fully thought that they were going to still make the playoffs. They thought that Tyrone Corbin was going to come in and fix everything, and that team was just going to keep going. They thought it was a good thing that they fired Michael Malone. They did. I was there for it.
Malone said it's the best thing that's ever happened to him.
To him. But yeah, he said that years later.
Said it like two days ago.
Yeah. In the moment, they thought they were doing right by themselves and by their franchise, and they were wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And this one here, it feels so similar. Like, you have to, there are so many moments where we can talk about like the whole 16-year playoff drought. And I've told you guys this, there's so many moments where you miss by a smidge, where you chose the wrong player, or where you made the wrong move, or, you know, a player got hurt, you know, like so many moments that made up a 16-year playoff drought. And I just feel like almost every single time they choose the wrong thing to do in the crucial moments, and it ends up hurting them and damaging what they're trying to do long-term almost every time. And again, I don't think it's intentional. I don't think there's someone who's, you know, behind the scenes meddling that wants his team to lose, because that's not the case. Like, they've always wanted to win, but that doesn't change the fact that whatever they are doing, it always costs them. And that's just kind of like, it's the reality of this franchise over the last, not just, you know, not just the Vivek era, but even before that. And it's really tough to watch, you know, something that had so much potential 2 years ago, mm-hmm. have so little potential today. And that's where I'm kind of at.
It feels like they make one move. And this is, I feel like this has been the case forever. It feels like they make one move at a time. They never think about like the consequences of a move. They never think about, well, if we make this move, what about this move that we haven't made yet? Like you hear, oh, so-and-so is always thinking four steps ahead. Not the Kings. They just, what's in front of us? All right, do that. Like, they never think about anything else. Like, there's no foresight.
Yeah, I would agree with you. And I would also tell you that when DeMarcus Cousins can basically go out and on a video clip say that same exact thing, and just like they live in the moment too much. You know, they made the playoffs, but they had no plan after making the playoffs. And it's such a weird thing, because I know these guys aren't stupid. Mm-hmm. And I know, like, the guys that are running that front office, they're smart guys. You know, you can say whatever you want about Wes Wilcox, you know, now that he's not there anymore. But Wes Wilcox he's a very smart dude. It's not like he's just some rube he's throwing darts at a dartboard. So it's just tough to put those things together. Mm-hmm. Like, you have really smart guys. You have people who have had success, and whether it's with NBA teams before or in different walks of life, they've had success, but the opportunity here just never seems to breed like the long-term success that you would hope. And it's really frustrating, you know, like the last thing I want to do is get on the air and just talk negative all the time about this team. But if I'm not being real, then like, what exactly am I doing here? And what would that do? Like, I'm not going to lie to people and say everything is, you know, like, is spectacular. We're literally looking at a team that may or may not make the play-in tournament, that may or may not win a game in the play-in tournament. Chances are losing their first round pick. Like, so this offseason in particular is tough to wrap your head around. We don't know, as of what is today, April 2nd, who is going to be making decisions for this team in 2 weeks. We don't know who the head coach is. We don't know if Monty McNair will be back or not. We already know that the assistant general manager's out the door. There are so many question marks heading into this particular offseason, and it just, like, rewind, like, 12 months, it just didn't feel like that we would possibly be in this situation right here that we're in, which is just, it's disappointing.
Yeah, we kind of talked about, you know, Sabonis, you know, the clarity comments, and, you know, that seems to, you know, stick with us a little bit. And I ask you, James, why wouldn't a guy like Sabonis be 10 toes down with the organization? And I'm not saying he isn't. I'm just using him as an example. Like, De'Aaron Fox was that way, all this other stuff. Why wouldn't they, hey, I signed here, I want to see this thing through, as opposed to, I got to get out of here?
You're asking today why would he not be 10 toes down?
Yeah, sure.
I don't know. I mean, like, look, you're an NBA player who only has a certain amount of years you get to play. And, you know, he goes out there almost every night. You know, this season he's missed a few games, but even the games that he's missed, you know, like, realistically, this dude's a warrior. He goes out there and plays as much as he can, right? He goes out there and puts up really close to 20 and 14 and 6 assists. He's consistent. He works on his craft all off season. People complain he doesn't hit the 3-point shot. He comes back this year and he shoots 41% from three. You know, they complain about, you know, his defense. He gets better defensively. He gets better as a defensive rebounder. You know, they complain about all these things, and he goes and attacks those things in the off season, like the professional that he is. Like, you get to a certain point, though, with a place that you're at, where you look around and say, where are we going? What are we doing? You know, and at a certain point, you have to do what's right for yourself. And I know we can all look at his contract and say, well, the Kings made a commitment to you. It's like, yeah, they made a commitment to you, and then they literally did almost nothing after that. After that point, they just, like, stopped being active. You know, they signed Harrison Barnes that offseason. They had trade after trade fall through. And then you get to a point where you're even at the trade deadline last year, where they could have added to this team, and they didn't. And so if you're looking at your career path and thinking, okay, I'm going to win 38, 39, 40 games this year. If they get lucky, they might win 41 right now, as they said. Like, you made a commitment to being the best player you can be. And a franchise has not made the commitment to putting the best team around you possible. And you can say, hey, they've tried. You can say, hey, you're part of the reason. All of those things. And I'm not going to argue. Like, you know, Domantas Sabonis would have to be, you know, responsible for everything that's happened here, at least to a certain degree. But this isn't the team he signed up to be on. It's, you know, even De'Aaron Fox is gone. So, like, if he's not 100% in, it's not because he hates Sacramento and he doesn't want to be here. It's because he's looking at his own career, his own legacy in the game, and saying, how is this going to reflect on me? And if it's not going to reflect on you positively, and if you think you're going to just spin your tires for the next 3 or 4 years here until your contract's up, like, what good is that? Like, do you think Domantas Sabonis wants to play for a 32-win team? And the answer is no. Domas wants to be in the playoffs. He wants to be noted amongst the best players in the league. And he also, sometimes the opportunity that you're in, it doesn't lead to that. And he's not the first guy, and he won't be the last guy. I mean, Damian Lillard ran his course in Portland. And to be honest with you, Damian Lillard asked out about 2 or 3 years too late. Like, if he would have asked out earlier, he would have had the potential to go win championships.
Well, no, he asked out after he signed that contract extension, and I think that limited things a little bit. Like, that was, as great as Dame is, Hammer, that was a tough contract to trade for. Like, you had to have very specific types of players that made a lot of money that allowed you to move on from them but still be a solid basketball team to bring Dame into. And, you know, it doesn't mean your point about it being a couple of years too late is invalid, but I do think the fact that he willingly signed that extension to lengthen that contract a little bit did hamper. He eliminated any control that he had, that's for sure, and it put him in a situation where he probably limited the teams that could actually acquire him.
Yeah, but there were still teams lining up to go get him. I mean, the Heat still wanted Damian Lillard, and, you know, like, there were teams that still wanted him. The Bucks still wanted him, and if it was an open, you know, race to go get him, he would have had plenty of other suitors. You got to remember, Dame also put the restriction that he wanted to go to Miami, right?
Right.
And then they traded him somewhere else.
Yeah.
And that's typically the way it goes. Like, it's fine, you want to go somewhere, but as a franchise, it's on you to do the best you can do for the franchise. So look, I don't blame if Domantas Sabonis says, hey, like, this thing's run its course, like, he's going to let them have an offseason. He's going to let them, like, go out and figure out what happens on draft night and on July 1st when the free agency period opens up and, you know, the season starts on July 1st. You know, but that doesn't mean that at the end of the day, he's not going to look at this and go, hey, what are we doing here? And, you know, will he ask out this summer? I don't think so. Will he ask out mid-season next year? That's always a possibility. But that's where, again, it's on the Kings to go out there and build a roster that's competitive, or to not build a roster that's competitive, but do right by the player and say, okay, you're right, we're not going to be good, we're not going to be competitive for the next 2 years, 3 years. We're going to take a major step back. We've got 9 first-round picks. We've got a stack of second-round picks. We're just going to take a big step back, and we understand that you don't want to waste the prime of your career in that situation, and that's okay. So we'll find a spot for you to go. Don't put a bunch of restrictions on us. We're going to try to get the best deal we can for you. But, you know, there are teams out there that would love to have Domantas Sabonis. And there are other teams that would say, hey, I'm not taking that $40 million, $45 million contract. So
all that is the exact opposite of what happened with De'Aaron Fox. They did right by De'Aaron Fox, and he put restrictions on him. And it didn't work out at all, according to many.
Okay, but why did it not work out?
Because he put restrictions on him, and they tried to do right by De'Aaron Fox. He wanted to go to San Antonio. We'll get you there. Now, the minutia of that deal, they probably could have done a little bit more. I'm not in the negotiations, but it feels like you could have got more, or at least one more piece, whether it's a draft asset or a player from San Antonio to help out that deal. That would be my argument, is you could have done more there. But the basis of it all was, we're going to take care of you. This is where you want to go. You know what I mean? And he let it be known, directly or indirectly, this is where I want to go.
It was directly. There was nothing indirect about it. It was direct.
You know, so he put restrictions on him, and they tried to take care of him. And according to everybody, that hadn't worked out good at all.
No, but you also, in that trade, you had a choice between dealing with just San Antonio, or San Antonio and the Bulls, or San Antonio and someone else. And you chose to try to maintain what you were doing in Sacramento, and trade for Zach LaVine in that move. Mm-hmm. And to be honest with you, that's the Kings' decision right there. The Spurs had no say in that. And, well, I mean, the Spurs did in the end did have at least some conversations in it, but like, if they just wanted to deal with the Spurs would have just dealt with the Kings. And, you know, again, the Kings would have had to take back some pieces from the Spurs because of the salary that Fox made. But the Kings made the decision to go the Zach LaVine route. And, you know, again, that can be a topic of discussion for down the road. But at the same time, like, I would say that you now know what you should have already known was that the pairing of Zach LaVine and DeMar DeRozan wasn't going to work, because we had 3 years of it in Chicago to look at and say, hey, that didn't work there. Why would it work in Sacramento? And so, again, like, the Kings easily could have just taken another path with that transaction where, you know, whether they took back Keldon Johnson or whether they took back Zach Collins or they took back something else, but not $45 million in contract, or $43 million this year, $46 and $49. So again, like, we have the hindsight of that, but it's not like we also didn't have years and years and years of understanding what that pairing would look like or who Zach LaVine is as a player. So I don't, like, anything that Zach LaVine has done here in Sacramento should not be a surprise, because it's exactly what he's done the last 3 years and exactly what he's done throughout his 11 years in the NBA. And that's, I'm not saying that in a negative way, but what I am saying is that if Zach LaVine is on your team, you now have to figure out how to maximize Zach LaVine. That should be one of the major objectives of this summer, is to figure out how to get Zach LaVine in a place where he can be as productive as he was with the Bulls, and can be a centerpiece on your team. And again, that's going to require you to do some mixing and matching of your roster again. And hey, that's where you are. That's where you are today. You've got to figure out how to move forward with Zach. And again, I've said it here a million times. I think Zach is an incredible offensive weapon, and I actually think he can really work with Domantas Sabonis, but not in this situation. You have got to change this specific situation if you're going to move forward with Zach LaVine and Domantas Sabonis as your two primary players.
All right, we'll come back. There's a lot more we want to talk with James Hamm about as it pertains to the Sacramento Kings. Of course, we got Sacramento Kings basketball coming up at 4 o'clock. We'll get you ready for that. Over there on the television set, it's Dealing with KC, brought to you by Sky River Casino and Sacramento Sports Leader ESPN 1320. I hate when KC does that. He asks great questions during the commercial break. So basically what happened is Kenny told James he's full of crap. James responded to Kenny, "Dude, you're an idiot." And that's where we were the last
I didn't think that was something we've...
You didn't think Patrick Willis was on there either.
Yeah, we'll make that call. The worst decision maker, perhaps in the history of sports.
We will make
media.
That call for you, KC.
Yes, that's right.
We can rehash it. The question that
I don't need to take a picture with Patrick Willis with my show's shirt on.
Yeah, or tell the super cool story on air.
Right.
The question I asked, because James had said, "Why did you go get LaVine and DeRozan when it's been proven that pairing isn't successful and it doesn't work?" And I just asked the question, why is that pairing looked at as one that just doesn't work and isn't a winning one? And Sabonis and Fox is looked at with all this promise when the resumes of the two pairings are the same. Now, I'm not here to say one works, one doesn't. They both work, they both don't. I'm just saying, why is the perception of one that it's just proven that you can't win here? And the other one was like, man, the future was so bright with these two when they both went to the playoffs one time. They both had a disappointing second season together. And then the third season was a train wreck for both pairings to start off before moves were made. And I just was trying to figure out why the perception is different when the results are the exact same.
Yeah, and I'll...
This is where James said, "You're an idiot." And sorry, James.
I'll just reiterate what I said before. It's that when you look at the pairing of LaVine and DeRozan, they are too redundant, number one. Number two, they just personality-wise, play-style-wise, whatever it is, I don't know what it is that makes Zach LaVine shoot 6 times in a game or 9 times in a game. I don't know what it is about playing with DeMar DeRozan, but he's just a different player when he's playing with DeMar DeRozan. And I never thought that the play style of Domantas Sabonis and De'Aaron Fox clashed at all. I just think that they didn't put the pieces around them. And I think my point would be that I think you could have put pieces around Domantas Sabonis and De'Aaron Fox and found success, because we saw it in year one, the 48 win season. We saw it that year where guys are shooting the ball, guys are finding success, all that stuff. Year two, like, again, Kevin Huerter went from having his best career season to having his worst career season. You saw Keegan Murray regress in year two greatly, but you didn't add pieces to the puzzle. And then year three, we can talk about the 13 and 18 season, but I'm just going to add the one ingredient that we didn't discuss off the air, is that the one move that you did make was to remove Harrison Barnes from the team and put DeMar DeRozan on the team. And so when you add all of that, this season, is it a success or a failure? It's a failure. Make no mistake. It's a failure that you signed a coach to a 3-year extension and then fired him 31 games into the season. It's a failure that you had to trade your best player midseason. This season is a complete failure. Now, has Doug made the best lemonade he can out of the lemons you gave him? Yeah, I think, you know, probably. Maybe he could have done better here and there. Maybe he could have done worse. But that doesn't change the fact that when we get done with this season, it's going to be looked at as a very, very disappointing and failure of a season. But that doesn't, when I look at what we're watching on the court today, we're watching two players that spent 3 years together before and did not work as a pairing. And we're watching them continue that in Sacramento where they don't work together. And you're waiting until, you know, the clock strikes midnight on this team in a week and a half, 2 weeks. And then you're figuring out how to break the pair up. And again, I don't think they hate each other. I don't think that it's anything like that. It's just some players don't work together. And I don't compare the Domantas Sabonis and De'Aaron Fox era to like what we're seeing from these two guys at all. It's just because I don't think Sabonis and Fox ever had a problem playing together on the court. They complemented each other plenty of times on the court as players. The Kings just didn't do the logical steps to continue to build the roster.
So we're just going on vibes and feel? Because everything you said is great. The results are still the results. And the resumes are the same.
I'm going to take the first two seasons of Fox and Sabonis, and I'm not going to include this season with Fox and Sabonis because it's not just Fox and Sabonis.
Okay.
It's Fox and Sabonis and DeMar DeRozan. And, you know, again, Keegan Murray getting off to a bad start. Kevin Huerter proving that last season was not an anomaly, that it was, you know, who he is as a player with the Sacramento Kings. That's how I look at it. I mean, again, we can like break it down to its finer nuances, but I just don't think that this team is built right. It wasn't built right from the start of this season. We thought that they would win more games and that this wouldn't be just like a huge thing that came undone. But just my opinion. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe the Domantas Sabonis. Maybe Domantas will go to San Antonio and play for the Spurs alongside De'Aaron Fox, and we'll see if it works somewhere else.
Does De'Aaron refollow him after that?
Yeah.
Does he follow him back on Instagram? Like, oh, he's here. Now I can see his post again.
Yeah.
Some of that 11 wine or whatever it's called. That cab. Well, since we're talking about Sabonis, we had a spirited conversation about him earlier. Hammer, there's a... I hate asking questions. I feel like I know what people are going to answer. Mm. We had a conversation about Domas earlier, and obviously one of the big topics of discussion, Hammer, has been the lack of a point guard. There's no true point guard. We need Fred VanVleet, an organizer here, to get everything in line for Sacramento. And I looked back, and just kind of glanced at a couple of things over the last couple of years. And the guy who led the team in assists in most games, and certainly on average, was Domantas Sabonis. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean you're running the offense, but it sure as hell felt like the offense was running through Domantas Sabonis the last few years. Why does that not feel like it's the case this year?
Yeah, they came into the season and switched up the offense. And I don't know why they did that, but you know, towards the end of last season, they made some changes to the offense as well. I think other teams figured out a little bit of what their offense was doing. But to me, it doesn't make any sense. Like the last game where, you know, they end up losing to Indiana, the fact that didn't Domas have zero assists in that game? Part of that is that, like, hey, look, sometimes guys miss shots and you don't get your assists, right? But like zero, that doesn't make sense that every single shot that was taken from Domantas Sabonis was missed. So I don't get it. The other point I would, like the last two games, Zach LaVine and and Malik Monk have decided that they're not going to value the ball at all.
Mm.
And to me, like the easy solution there is to not have them have the ball in their hands very often and to let them play off of Domas. But I don't get it. I don't like the easiest path forward is to like, again, focus on the guy that you know understands the offense, that you know is an equal opportunity passer. He helps his teammates get better, and you're not running the ball through him. So decisions are made on the court. Decisions are made going into games. But whoever's making that decision, and I don't think it's like someone saying, hey, I'm not going to give the ball to Domas tonight, and I'm not going to run through the offense through him. I think it's something that these players right now are in their heads a little bit and lost a little bit. And in the end, they're not making the decisions that just makes the game easier for everybody. And it's probably one of the more disappointing things that we're seeing on the way down the stretch in this season is just that there is no true identity to this team. And, you know, we can talk all we want about the DHO game and all that being the identity of this team 2 years ago. It was, and they had the highest offensive rating in the history of basketball that season to that date. Now it's been killed the last 2 years, but you know, it just seems like the easiest path forward is one that this Kings team, for whatever reason, chooses not to do almost every single time.
So real quick, Casey, not the person, talking about the basketball player, the game. Did Mike Brown not like Domantas Sabonis' basketball game?
No. He liked Domas' game. Like, yeah. I mean, they built the game around him. But I also think that
so why would you change the offense coming into this year then? Because that's Mike. Well,
they changed it last year.
They did.
That's Mike, too.
Yeah.
That's what, isn't that what, didn't Domas get mad about it?
Yeah, we had a bunch of stuff we were running, and we don't run no more.
But then at the same time, Domas, didn't he average 8.1 assists, 8.2 assists last season?
Mm.
Like he had his best assist season ever last year. And like, look, it's very possible that it's that the Kings aren't a very good 3-point shooting team and just makes them a whole lot more predictable. And teams are just cluttering the lane with players and the looks aren't, you know, Domas isn't having the wide open look to a guy in the corner. Or the wide open, you know, kickback to a guy sitting at the top of the key. I mean, part of it is the fact that they're not a good 3-point shooting team, and it's not just that Domas isn't getting assists off the 3-point shot to his teammates, like, and that's why his assist numbers are down. But it's that Domas and no one is getting assists off of those 3-point shots because more often than not, they're inconsistent and not hitting their 3-point shots. Yeah, I don't, you know, it's like a chicken or the egg situation, but sure. Like I'm still not sure why you go away from Sabonis as your key offensive hub, especially when you're going into a game against a super fast-paced team in Indiana that moves the ball. You know, that's typically when you see the Kings at their best is when the ball's hopping, right? And it's bouncing from one guy to the next, and everybody's involved and everybody's touching the ball. Again, look at the Blazers game like a week and a half ago. That was just beautiful basketball. They only ended up with 24 assists, but it was okay in that game because for whatever reason, they didn't register a couple of extra assists. But they shorted past the ball well. It's just not who they've been. And I'd also say as the level of competition ratchets up, this team usually defaults to bad basketball. They default to like who they are as rudimentary players, not in a system. And they have a lot of work to do on what the system is moving forward.
Ben's little bro asked, did we fix the Kings yet? No, we did not.
No. To that game.
We did not.
To that game specifically. Because I remember watching the game. And mind you, when I say this, I didn't necessarily have a problem with it. Domantas Sabonis was getting the ball, he was just shooting a lot. He shot 19 times in that game. He shot 17 times in the first three quarters. Like, we beg him to take 12 shots in a game.
Against Indiana?
Against Indiana. And I remember just watching him. He was just shooting the ball a lot. And like I said, I'm not even saying it as a bad thing because I want that level of aggression from him from time to time. And I think – in a game like that, I don't know if they're necessarily going away from Domas. It might have been more if he was looking for a shot a little bit more than normal.
Yeah, but then I think it is them going away from him, because look at what happened in the fourth quarter. That they went away from him. Like, they went away from what was working the entire game, what helped them build the 16-point lead. They just abandoned it. And that's why you lost that game. You lost that game because Domantas Sabonis had 19 shot attempts, 17 of them came through three quarters, and two of them came in the fourth, and I believe the one that he hit was a rebound and putback. Like, what are you doing? Like, if you're playing basketball at any level and a guy is dominating his coverage, you keep feeding him, and they stopped. And so that's a fundamental flaw to this team. It's the me landscape. It's not being able to say no, not having a teammate say that's enough, and not holding guys accountable in the moment. That's what this season feels like. When we get to the end, it's going to be way too many games this season where individuals decided that it was their time to shine and not the team's time to shine, and it costs them. And then when one or two players start doing that on this team, everybody follows suit. It becomes a either guys go into hero mode and try to match the other hero mode, or other guys just stand around and go, well, I'm not going to touch the ball again. I don't know why I'm here. And I think that that's where we get to. And I'm not just saying one player, because I think there have been multiple players who have done this exact same thing, but the system has not been strong enough to withstand those individual moments of players. There is no relying on a system.
That also goes to Dame, what you were talking about earlier, right? With Domantas Sabonis. Like, where you yelled at him. You were like, you're supposed to be the man.
It's a two-time All-NBA player.
Yeah.
Grow some balls.
Please. Tell him, give me the goddamn ball.
Yeah, say something.
Give me the ball. You yell at people for everything else. Yell at them to give you the goddamn ball.
He does yell a lot.
Yeah, he's yelling at people all the time. If you got a mismatch, if you're Domantas Sabonis, hey, run this when we come down to court next time. Get me to rock. And that is where, when you talk about, and we'll bring this full circle a little bit, when you talk about not being a good matchup with DeMar and Zach LaVine in Chicago, on the court, they may not have been a good matchup. You know, just the way they played their position and all this other stuff. De'Aaron Fox and Domantas Sabonis, they may not have been a good matchup mentally, emotionally, leadership-wise. Because when times got tough, time situations like that, Domas is, in those situations, Domas's default is what? He's told us. Does anybody know? Pop quiz time.
The default to De'Aaron.
To whoever. Where do you want the ball? I'm going to come set a screen for you. That's his default. And if, and sometimes you need your leader, your best player, to say, give me the ball. Give me the rock. And if you're just going to just, you know, fall back and let this other stuff happen, I don't know if you need that either. You need somebody a little bit more assertive. And when De'Aaron and Sabonis were here, sure, they worked great on that pick and roll on the left side of the floor, but neither one of them were assertive personalities.
No, but I would also tell you that on off the court, neither is DeMar. On the court, he is. And I would say that, like, the one time where we saw someone stand up and have words with DeMar, it was Trey Lyles. Trey Lyles had enough. And you know, again, it was like, what are we doing? Everything is working, and then you've got to go force a bad shot. You've got to go force a bad shot followed by a bad turnover. Like, what are you doing? And that, you know, I'm not going to disagree with you. One of the flaws to this team is that they don't have, like, that one guy who, you know, in the locker room is an alpha dog who goes at other players off the court. On the court, that is what DeMar does. DeMar says, hey, like, it's my turn. And that's the problem with Zach. Zach's not that guy. And just like De'Aaron wasn't, De'Aaron would take control of a game, but he also, when he got into uncomfortable situations, would defer to other people. The, you know, again, we talked about it earlier, the me and Kyle, when you look at the game that Jokic had last night, mm-hmm. 61 points, right? 10 rebounds, 10 assists. The only other player this season to score 60 in a game is De'Aaron Fox. Like that's De'Aaron Fox is a like tremendous basketball player, but
they both lost
to the Wolves.
What a oh wow, that's crazy! Wow,
yeah, and he's also a player that can't do that every night because he doesn't have the personality to do it every night.
Yeah,
and so the Kings don't have that personality, to be that player to step in and say something. They just don't. So I don't know. A void of leadership, maybe, but at the same time, I think, trying to hold on, trying to keep this thing straight on for this season alone was a mistake. And part of that is that you're just kind of let the thing spin out of control, and whoever wants to take control on the court is who's getting to take control on the court. And there's not a dominant personality to say no. And again, this is on Doug Christie as well. If Doug doesn't want to say no, if he doesn't want to pull a guy out of a game who misses four straight shots in the fourth quarter and just keeps looking for his shot, then look, it's not about one player winning a game. It's about a team winning a game. And if you can't be the guy who says no, then, I don't know what to say. You've got to be more forceful in the moment, in huddles, like calling timeouts, or just pulling guys and saying, hey, look, everything was going really well until you decided that it was your turn. And now things aren't going really well. And I'm going to go a different direction for the next 5 minutes in this game. And we're going to see how it ends up, because what we have seen over the last, 65, 70 games, like an inconsistency that is unacceptable and isn't working. So it's tough, but like, hey, tough decisions have to be made this offseason. And, it's not just one player, but sometimes it's a mix of players that cause the problem. And I think that's where we're at right now.
We have tough decisions to make right now. For those that have the TV on in front of them, mm-hmm. Morgan looks 10 out of 10, 15 out of 10. She's got like a form fitting top, a very baggy pants. It's with the belt on. It's a full like one piece thing. Phenomenal. Yeah. Amazing look.
Okay.
Something about Deuce is really bothering me. And I think it's the shirt.
Oh no.
I think Deuce's shirt is bothering me.
Oh, no.
One, I think he accidentally wore colors that are a little bit too close to the Wizards colors. Two, it's a very active shirt that feels... Now, dress shirts are generally timeless, but the pattern feels very 2015.
Oh, well, what is it? 2015
I don't know. It's just, they'd show Morgan, I'm like, wow, Morgan. And then they'd show Deuce, like, ah, what is that? I don't. Deuce is normally 10 out of 10.
Yeah.
I'm going 6.5 for Deuce today. I don't like it. I don't like it.
We get to it before the show ends.
Well, the show's about to end. We're going to run it back. We're all going to flip on our TVs and watch the game. We're going to tune in to James and Kyle tomorrow beginning at 10 a.m.
Giants win today, A's lose.
Are the A's ever going to win?
Maybe not. Not here.
Well, I was going to say, are the A's ever going to win here in Sacramento? Maybe that's the gimmick. I feel like, I guess we could talk about this tomorrow. We have to go. You're not going to see Deuce live. Okay, here, come on, sweep the camera around. Come on, man. Well, you're not going to see it. You're going to have to tune in tomorrow. We'll run it back next on Sacramento Sports Leader, ESPN 1320.
Vamos, Kings, light the beam.